passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Welcome back. Great to have all of you here. Final hour of the show. It's been pretty eventful, and Miss Pat is up next.
Hey, Paul. This may take me a whole minute for this phone call. First thing I want to do is tell you you have the patience of Job. The second thing is I wanted to say thank you to Expired for his call last Thursday when he said such nice things about me and Cheerleader. He was actually defending me because I don't think anybody actively dislikes Cheerleader, but that was really nice. And the other, I wanted to say something about the investigative reporter talking about the money the schools are paying out to the football coaches that are being fired. First of all, the football programs bring in so much TV money. And without that money, there wouldn't be a lot of money to pay for those other programs that, you know, get a lot of it. And if you don't have a good team, you don't get as much football money. And the one other thing is, a lot has been said about Miss Terry. I've been wondering, what does Mrs. Feinbaum think about some of your wackier callers and about girls like me who profess to not love you but seem to have a crush on you? So thank you, Paul. I'll just hang up and
listen.
Thank you
very much.
Bye.
I don't want to speak for her, but I think she feels pretty comfortable with where things are. Trey is up next.
Well, Paul, Miss May had come out with some stats, didn't you? She did pretty good. Didn't you think that was a good phone call?
She nailed it.
Yes, she did. Hey, two things real quick. I don't see much change tonight in the CFP. I think Georgia jumps Ohio State. We know Ole Miss, Penn State will be out. So I think Louisville will be about 9, Oregon State 10. But I want to pick your brain a minute real quick. Why do you think that Jaden Daniels can't win the Heisman? And before you answer, I know that Ricky Williams, Lamar Jackson, Bo Jackson, and Tim Tebow, they all won the Heisman when their team has 3 losses. And correct me if I'm wrong, I know we tend to put them in there when we vote for someone. And I thought this was more of an individual award. And, Paul, I don't think Jaden Daniels means more to LSU than any other player in this country, because I can't imagine where LSU would be without him. So if I had a vote, I think it would be Jaden Daniels up front. But I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit, and I'll hang up and listen, and thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, I think a couple of reasons. He can win it. I just said I thought it starts to stack up against him toward the end. But, you know, he is certainly in the running. But my argument will continue to be this, that all of the other competitors, or most of the other competitors, will have big moments at the right time. You look at politics. What swings polls? Why do we obsess over presidential debates? Because they influence voters late in the process. And Jaden just doesn't have that opportunity. And that is my point. It's not how I feel. I haven't decided who I'm going to vote for yet, because I don't think you should decide until you've seen the last game. And when I get through watching the games on championship weekend, I may go, none of these guys rose to the level. But you have to remember, this is a national award. We're immersed in the South for the most part. Thank you for the call. Do appreciate it. And all those things you said are true, but there are circumstances. This is a very crowded field right now. Penix, Bo Nix, Marvin Harrison. There is not a clear favorite at this point in time. That's the biggest negative, I think, for Jaden. As of today, he's probably ranks about 2nd in the polling, but that means nothing in 3 weeks. Judy is up next. Hello, Judy.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I really wish I could have spoken with you yesterday after. I'm not going to call him I-Man. I think he's a caveman. And I'm sure his surname must be Ron and his first name Mo Ron. But anyway, I think he should take his wanderlust sons, A.J., from, I think it's Pell City, Alabama.
Right.
And AC from who knows where. He claims it's Bangladesh, whatever. But he should take these two on the road and try out maybe at some of these, I don't think the state fairs would take him, but possibly some bingo halls might use them. But they have to work. I noticed AJ's trying to mimic the pathetic, you know, the pathetic way that K-Man thinks he's mocking, you know, Nick Saban when he speaks and everything, you know, that kind of crap. I don't know if it was Ruth, a couple calls ahead that before me rather that said, you have the patience of Job. I agree with her. I think you have integrity and I appreciate it because I can get very upset when it comes to listening to this stuff sometimes. And I am very defensive for you. I don't like it when they attack your character. And I don't know. I just wish K-Man would just knock it off, take a break. You know, I just don't know why he didn't even move from Alabama. Because does he realize you have to go into Alabama to get to Auburn? I don't know if he's aware of that, but he should be. And I can't call him my man. Like I said, his name's Caveman, and it should be Moron. And anyway, I'm taking it. I'm saying everything I think right now. I'm probably going to remember it. I don't care. And I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you very much. And thanks so much for calling. Anyone want to wager who the next caller is? And then believe my next statement that we don't set all this up in advance? I-Man is up next.
Judy. You know, I must be doing something right there, Paul, because I tell you, that little sharp focus, that little bammer focus she's got, it was clearly on me. And she spent, 3 minutes talking about me. And all them names, them derogatory names. Hey, I'm doing my job, and I take that as a compliment because I'm sitting in your brain. Judy. Now, Paul, it seems to me I've been getting some text about some northern callers calling in here raising a lot of hell with you. Is that the way the show has been going today?
Accurate.
What the hell has the North won since the Civil War? Nothing. Now, they did take all the crime rates and all the no jobs, and the majority of the people in this country don't work all up north of the Mason-Dixon line. That's a fair statement. And you know what? The South has not only taken all the sports over, damn near all the sports, we've taken just about all the automobile industry out of the North. And they're down here. Because those people up there, they won't work. They won't work. We won't work for this county. We need a union. We need to organize. You know, the only thing the South hadn't taken away from the North Pole is the damn weather, and we're doing a good job of doing that. We're going to take the damn weather, too, and make you stay up there and not have a job. All that crime, all them crooked politicians, and all them lame-ass football teams. And we're going to wait till you come down here for the bowl games, and then we're going to set the record straight. And that's the way it's going to be. Now, moving on to the Bammers, are they still wishing and hoping and praying to touch down Jesus? Jesus, save us, Jesus! I mean, they're praying. They're on their knees. Are they the head fans? Because they're on their knees. I mean, they just do anything for a glimpse of some recognition. And I'm trying to give them some, and I'm trying to reach out with the friendliest hand I got, snatching it back, saying, not today. War damn eagle. Judy. Have a good day.
Larry is up next in Shelby. Hello, Larry.
They need to make that stuff illegal. Now they use that in the medical field for mental illness. That man has done lost his marbles. They're rolling around the damn floor and he's looking for them. Jesus, come on, man. Hey, Paul, check it out. I'm going to bring something up. How are you going to make a good coach when you pay him more than he'll probably make in a lifetime? How are you going to make him a better coach? All you're doing is making a bad coach. That's all they're doing, paying $8 or $9 million damn dollars to coach, what, 2 years? Hello?
Yeah, no, Larry, I was just listening.
Don't you agree? And just like the show, Randy, Friday, here we are on with Kentucky. And Kentucky and Laura comes on the show. I like to talk to Laura. Is there some gag order on it?
Well, yeah, there is. We don't take calls when we have guests on Friday.
Why not? She knows me. She named her son after me, Jack.
Well, that's true. She did.
That's right. Uh-huh.
She did name her son after
you. That's right. You listen right. Named her son after me, Jack. Hey, I think we need to fire a producer and get another producer. I just really, I'm probably going to be able to call never again. But seriously, man, it was boring. At least we work all week with y'all, make y'all professional and make y'all look good, real damn good. And we have a hard time making y'all look good. Sometimes we have a tough time. And that's how you appreciate us. You won't even let us talk on Fridays, hardly.
Larry, we only have a few more of those, and then the show will be yours, okay?
We ain't going nowhere. Stop talking like that. Don't say that. I'd run Randy's ass off and take his place. I could be a co-producer and hang with him and help him out. That'd be neat now, me and Randy. Hell yeah, baby. You imagine? I'd rather answer the phone. This is who? Ah, man. Who? How you spell that?
Larry, a quick question here. How many cans of beer have you...
No, I ain't talking about that. It don't matter if I had 20.
You sound a tad bit drunk.
I don't get drunk. No, I don't get drunk, Paul. I get pissed off. That's what I get. And you trying to avoid me and going to another subject, and I'm just going to tell you right now about 8. But that ain't got dang darn thing to do with it now. You can't even help me get a date on this show. What good is this show, really?
Where we tried, but you acted like a fool.
I'm a fool?
Yeah.
What'd you say to me? I'm going to be in Atlanta here pretty shortly. And what'd you say?
Well, Larry, you may be in Atlanta, but there will be security around, and we will throw you in jail if you...
That's
a promise.
LSU about too, last mile.
How would you like to spend the night in the Atlanta jail?
Be found when I costed him.
Would you like
no
that?
No, would have been fair. I costed his ass.
Who was that?
Sure did, buddy.
Oh, John Hayes?
Nobody's putting up with no mess. I don't put up with no mess.
Who did you accost in Atlanta, Larry?
What?
Who did you accost in Atlanta?
Les Miles.
Oh, Les Miles. Larry, do me a favor.
Go lie down,
and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back. Cat Daddy is up next.
Big Paul looking good and sounding good as always.
Thank you.
I'm going to tell you what. College football is in it's one of them witches cauldron things right now. I don't know what you call it, but I can tell you one thing. Jim Harbaugh is doing what he's doing. They're yelling at Dabo Swinney. They're yelling at Shane Beamer. All your commentators on TV are just yelling. I don't know why that's happening. But I will tell you one thing, and I believe this more than anything in my life. Somebody, somewhere has gone crazy. The world has gone crazy, and ain't nobody stand up for nobody. My gosh, we got to get together as a people and pull together. No matter whether you're Alabama, you're South Carolina, you're Louisiana, it doesn't make any difference. This world is in a hell of a situation, and we need to all get together. Thank God for America. Thank you for giving me that chance to spout that. Other than that, Clemson, we're going to beat your ass.
Get back to the important things. Rob is in Kentucky. Hello, Rob.
Hey, Paul. Sober caller here. I hope that's okay.
Please.
Hey, Paul, I just got two quick questions, if you don't mind. I've only pressed redial about 110 times. But my first question is, Paul, who will Kentucky's AD and Stoops point the blame at this year and fire? They seem to fire someone every year, and I don't see Liam Cohen going anywhere. And my second question is, what does Kentucky have to do to become an elite like Bama, like Georgia, like Texas, like LSU? And I'd like just to take a minute and say we should all stand with Israel at this moment, because if you don't stand with Israel, you don't stand as humanitarian. And that goes for Cat Daddy and whoever else wants to dog me. But I appreciate you taking my call, Paul, and you have a wonderful night.
Yeah, Rob, I don't know really what to say. I was up in Lexington last weekend and came away really discouraged by what I saw from the Kentucky standpoint. I expected better from them. And, you know, the blame game is part of it. But ultimately, Mark Stoops is in charge of that program. He's responsible. And the program has been at the precipice for a number of years, and they just can't quite consistently stay above a certain line and level. Thank you very much for the call. Mark is in Mississippi. Hey, Mark, good afternoon.
No hottie totties for you today, Paul, but it's all good. We
Thank
lost
you.
A great team, a better team. I mean, you know, we'd face up to move on. I mean, although I would like to say, if Jackson Dart had not got hurt, missed most of the second half, and we don't have an injury-riddled offensive line, there's no way they beat us 52-17. I think we could make that into a respectable game. But credit Georgia, man. They got a chance to make history, and I hope they do. They can be the first time in college football history to win three in a row. That would be a Southeastern Conference team to do that. I hope they do it. I say go Dawgs. I think they can do it. I hope they do. As far as Ole Miss, we got a chance to have a really good season. We can go 10-2, which we're favored to do. We can go undefeated at home, 6-2 Southeastern Conference. Our only losses would be at Athens and at Tuscaloosa, and I can live with that. I think by the end of the year, after these last two games, there's a decent chance we'll keep you right back in the top 10 again. I think we'll be right outside the top 10 tonight, maybe the 12th spot. So I think we're pretty much a lock. We win these last two games, we'll do your six bowl. And one last thing before I let you go, Paul, I appreciate all the support and love for the vets this weekend. I'm a Navy vet myself. I served in the Persian Gulf. My dad's an Air Force vet from way back in the day. And I just want to say I appreciate it. And until next time, Paul, I hope good show. And see you until next time. I love your show, and talk to you again. Bye.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you for you and your dad's service. We'll take a short break. We have something special coming up you may not have been able to see if you're late to the party. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Yeah, we are really excited about heading to Tuscaloosa and say hello to Terrion Arnold, the Alabama defensive back who has had such a critical role in Alabama's big season. First of all, Terrion, thank you. We really appreciate you coming by, and I know there's two more games left. Two more on the regular schedule, I should say. There is going to be an SEC championship game. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great about it, and I appreciate you guys having me on the show, Paul.
We are delighted. I know at this point you've probably said so much about the season. You want to look ahead and try to finish out strong. But how would you describe these first 10 games and what it has meant to you and your teammates?
These first 10 games have really been, I would say, for me and my teammates, kind of like stepping stones. Like, each game, you see different things. You have adversity. And like Coach Saban said, they'll punch you in the mouth. You have to punch them in the mouth. And it's kind of like what we live by as far as the fourth quarter program. We have to be able to stand strong for fourth quarters and even overtime if that's included. And with that being said, the adversity and the way that we felt versus Texas, it was kind of something that we really – I wouldn't say that, obviously, nobody wants to lose, but it was something that humbled us. And things that we let slide and things that we let go by, we were able to pick up on those little things. And in the USF situation, as far as just seeing how people treated us after that, you know, in this fan base and with our fans – like the motto I've been preaching to the guys, we all we got, we all we need. And that's something that we're continuing to see in the growth, and I feel like we haven't played our best football yet.
You know what's interesting about that, Terrion, because, yeah, a lot of us in the media, we get paid to say things, and we call it like we see them. But it wasn't just the media, you know it, because it was former players who were coming after the trajectory on social media. And I'm assuming, based on what you said, that infiltrated into where you guys work and hang out, and must have affected you in a great way.
It did. Obviously, when you see guys that you grew up watching and guys that have been in your shoes before, when you watch them or you go and look at them say stuff about you, I'm one of those guys. I don't have Twitter. I mean, the thing I got is Instagram, so I didn't really see those comments. But for my teammates to bring it up to us and kind of it get in the locker room, it kind of disheartened us, because, I mean, it's obviously like, man, you're supposed to be right here with us. And you guys have been in our shoes before. So, if anything, you guys should be encouraging us with the adversity that we're trying to go through right now.
Terrion, was it any one comment that you heard from your teammates, or was it just a collage and a collection of shots that really really penetrated the mindset of the Crimson Tide?
No, I would say it was more than one. It was definitely like a bunch of different shots. And obviously, Coach Saban, he got asked about it in a couple things, and the team meeting that we had, he kind of addressed it and just said, you know, the guys that came before us, that was them, and this is now. Obviously, it's a whole different generation, a whole different era of football, and we have to stay where we're at right now.
And it's part of life. We all deal with it, anybody that's ever done anything, but those same guys who were taking the shots, they'll be slapping you on the back in a couple weeks in Atlanta, won't they?
They sure will. And I mean, that's the beauty of this thing right here, Paul. Like, I love it, because I mean, I'm one of those guys, I never forget what anybody says. And I don't know if you're like that too, but just from seeing you on the show, you kind of seem like the guy, and you have a great memory. Like, I'm one of those guys, I don't forget at all. So I mean, I can dap you up, smile in your face, but ultimately when you were dissing us or saying what you were saying behind our back, it's kind of like, yeah, I remember that. I remember it.
Well, and I, it's like your position. I have a couple of friends who have played what you do on a very high level, and it's you don't let the quarterback see what you're going to do. You try to fake them out. And I think the best thing, not that we're giving each other advice here, because you know a lot about this, is just shrug your shoulders and act like you didn't even hear it.
You're right about that.
And what you guys have done has answered the critics, and I want to ask you about that. Because on the field, the play has been fantastic. You know, a lot of statistics seem to point toward the second half, especially in some of the bigger games, the LSU game, the A&M game, the Tennessee game, the Kentucky game was pretty much over from the beginning. Is there anything that happens? Is it halftime? Is it just a progression that you're wearing the other team down that the second half has been so dominating for the Tide?
I would say it kind of goes like this. When you go out there and you get a feel for your opponent, obviously they're going to throw shots at you. You're going to throw shots at them. It's kind of like playing chess. I mean, it's kind of like just about initiating the pieces and kind of seeing who's going to be dominant first. And then when you kind of feel out your opponent, you kind of know then, like, oh, man, I got him. And that's the mindset that I have even when I'm playing corner. Like, when I line up, see against my opponent, those first couple releases, you're kind of like, okay, I see what he's working with. And I'm seeing what I'm seeing on film. And you get ready to compete. And obviously, when you go into the second half and you go into the locker room, great defensive coordinator Kevin Steele, T-Rod, we got a bunch of guys who see everything on the field. So when we're able to go in there and make those adjustments, write it out, make the corrections necessary to go out there and affect the game, we do a very, very great job of that. And Coach Saban, I mean, he's the best in the game at doing that. So I would say our mentality is we start off playing chess, and then in the second half, we start off playing Monopoly. but we got to go out there and be able to play Monopoly the whole game.
I've always wondered about the guys that play on the backside, because having spent a lot of time around Coach Saban early in his career, that's his position, as you know. And he takes a special pride. He even tried to teach me that position one day. And I'll tell you a quick story. We had a simulation, and the guy caught the pass over me, and I used the wrong hand to try
to. Come on, man. Offhand swat. Wrong hand swat. Exactly. I know he said it.
And I looked at him, and I didn't do anything. I wasn't about to tell him. I didn't want to say, Coach, you didn't tell me which hand to use. But he immediately knew. He said, I told you, I never told you you're supposed to use the other hand. I mean, he coached himself there. And I haven't played since, by the way. But if I ever get out there, I know what to do.
And, Coach, hey, like you just said, Coach Saban does a great job of that. Like, most people don't realize the guy's his own worst critic. Like, we'll come in the film room. Man, I'm sorry, man. I didn't prepare you guys for seeing that right there. Like, a lot of people don't understand, man. The guy takes a lot of heat, and he does a great job of just being even keel. I can honestly say, like, you can't tell if we're winning by 30, losing by 30. Like, I mean, the guy's even keel all over the board, and that's the way he lives his life. And I feel like that's why he has the success that he has. And that even partakes into the reason why I came to Alabama. I felt like I had to come here to learn how to win and learn how to deal with certain situations, and a lot of life lessons that you get from being around him and being in the program. I mean, it benefits you in a positive way, in ways that I couldn't even believe and imagine, and I'm really great that I made the decision to come here.
Which brings me to something you said a couple weeks ago. I think it was the A&M game when you mentioned an interaction with Coach Saban's wife, Miss Terry. It got a lot of attention, and obviously everyone loves her, but would you mind telling us that story?
Miss Terry, as she does before, we've been doing it since the season started. At first, I kind of thought maybe it might have been like, okay, Coach Saban might be telling her what to tell me so I could go out there and relay it to the guys and relay it to myself. But then I started to pick up on it like, nah, this ain't Coach Saban. Like, Coach Saban, he's very nice and generous, but he ain't this generous. This got to be Miss Terry. So as far as our relationship goes, like that Texas A&M game, she said, I know you remember your freshman year when we went out there and how you felt. So just try to channel that and get the guys going. And with that being said, she does it every game. Like, I got the text from her literally today. She was saying, Chattanooga, this is a chance to go out here and continue to grow. And obviously, when you're playing games like this, you never want to get caught slipping. Just like she said, the Kentucky game, when you have success beating LSU, beating Tennessee, two teams that you lost to in the former year, you could tend to get high. I mean, that's life. Like, in life, when you have success and you start – to have more and more success, you have to stay humble and you have to try to keep that even keel mindset. So with that being said, she does a great job of getting me back to that even keel and getting the guys back to that even keel. And she's really like a mom. Like most people, they can't really see the inside of it, so they kind of think maybe like when they're being recruited by here, oh, this might be fake. They don't really act like this. And I thought that at first too. But when I came here, like, they really are like this. Like, Miss Terry is really like this. She'll give you the shirt off her back. Same thing with Coach Saban. But most people, I mean, they're kind of terrified of Coach Saban, so they won't ask. But I'm the type of person, I'm going to ask. Like, hey, Coach, I need this. I need it. Like, coach me, Coach.
Terrion, a lot of players, after they want to play pro football, and then they think about a career maybe in broadcasting. I mentioned something right before we came on, and you really stunned me a little bit. But after sitting here talking to you for a few minutes, I have no doubt, because you are maybe the most natural athlete I've ever interviewed. I mean, you're just having fun with it. You're authentic. So tell the audience, once your playing career ends, what you would like to do.
If I'm being honest, when I get done with this, I want to act. Like, I really do. I watched we watched The Equalizer before we played A&M. And when I'm looking at Denzel Washington, obviously he's gotten older or whatever. I'm like, dang, man, I could really do that. And then, like, one of my favorite movies is Friday. So when I watched Chris Tucker on that, I'm like, man, I could go and kill this right now. But at the same time, though, when you connect with certain guys, I watched, like, Inky Johnson when he came and, like, the way he motivated us and made us feel, I feel like I could go into that role, too. And at the same time, though, kind of being like a Coach Prime, like the way he carries himself, the class he has and the confidence that he has, I feel like I got that, too. And another person I would kind of say is like a Roman Harper, kind of like same thing in your field, the way that he carries himself. I love the way he does that. And, you know, to each his own, even you, Paul, like, who's to say, like, me and you might not be doing business together in a couple years. Well, nah, I won't say a couple years because I plan to play for a long time. So. Yep.
Well, I appreciate you including the senior citizens here, Terrion. That was very nice of you. Hey, I hope so. I'll be a very old actor by the time you finish playing in the NFL. Hey, you
ain't
listen,
nothing wrong with that.
Hey, I will be waiting for you on the corner of Rodeo Drive and Hollywood Boulevard. Hey, listen, thank you very much. Congratulations on the season, and we can't wait to catch up with you again a little bit later on.
Appreciate you guys, man.
Thank you. What a absolute joy that was to talk to Terrion Arnold, the DB from the University of Alabama. We'll take a short break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.